This is Laura Tallis from Catholic Charities. Thank you for joining us. This is the second podcast in our series about workforce development. Kevin Creamer, the client services manager of our Daily Bread Employment Center, is here to discuss the historical context of workforce in Baltimore City and how it affects workforce development today. Thank you for joining me, Kevin.
Thanks so much for having me, Laura.
Absolutely. So first of all, can you tell us about your background in this field?
Certainly. So I came to work at Catholic Charities. My background is actually in education. I have a master's in theological education, and then came to Catholic Charities initially here in Baltimore, working in nonprofit administration as support staff for the executive director here for 3 years before I moved over to the St. Edward's Workforce Development Center, which has an automotive vocational training program and does job readiness education. Before transitioning very recently here to the client services manager here at our Daily Bread.
Wonderful. Well, it's great to have you.
Great to be here.
Awesome. Well, let's start at the beginning. Can you tell us about the historical background of workforce opportunities in Baltimore City?
Certainly. It's in a lot of ways, now is a really pressing time to have this conversation. But to give you just a sense of why this work is important. There's a number of factors that come into play and a number of factors that we see in doing this work about why someone might need access to those services. Workforce development is important, of course, because it provides the opportunity for employment and education for individuals who may not have that opportunity otherwise. But I think some of the current context around what we're seeing now is shedding greater light on you know, groups that may have been more systemically or systematically excluded from those opportunities. Baltimore is an interesting reflection of that reality. The St. Edward's Workforce Development Center that I managed prior to coming to our Daily Bread was located in West Baltimore. And one of the things that's incredibly evident in working both within that program at the time, but also just working across different Baltimore neighborhoods is the ongoing reality, the ongoing legacy of really systemic segregation in Baltimore neighborhoods and how that has impacted different parts of the city. Baltimore was one of the first city in the country to pass legal segregation laws in the early 1900s. While those laws were only on the books officially for about 5 years, they were replaced by what were called neighborhood covenants, which were essentially agreements that neighborhoods had, sort of homeowners associations and the like, to exclude certain populations. By and large, in Baltimore, those populations were African American and Jewish residents from living in those communities. And so the history of Baltimore is sort of a history of seeing how that very purposeful exclusion, while no longer the law, has resulted in very different opportunities and access to opportunities depending on where you are in the city. The history of Baltimore neighborhoods, by and large, is one where initially Jewish residents were the first to move into a neighborhood where they had been excluded, and then African Americans came as a population to sort of replace the residents in neighborhoods. So the neighborhood turnover happened that way, and what we see as a result is that the infrastructure, the resources of white residents at the time was taken and brought with them to different suburbs outside of the city. So there's this slow movement of resources, and those resources are many. Education, you know, businesses are located by and large where they expect to see traffic. And so businesses were relocating as part of that move. And so you see this ripple effect, and it's a ripple effect that lasts through time because we exist now at a time period where those decisions maybe aren't even intentional in terms of where businesses are located from an express exclusionary standpoint. But the end result is that those who grew up in neighborhoods without access to the same transportation, the same access to businesses locally nearby, don't have access to traditional workforce opportunities as we understand them. And so that effect is magnified by disproportionate incarceration rates for individuals, people of color, to the point where workforce development services as we offer them really need to address a number of systematic barriers that exclude from the workforce. It's not just a matter of, you know, why aren't you working? Why can't you get a job? It's really a matter of who's being set up for success and what resources are available in different parts of our city to make that job a reality, to make that an accessible opportunity for some.
Great. And how does this history affect and manifest in today's time?
Well, the ripple effect that I mentioned, with that distance and a history, a legacy that's ongoing, you have an end result where different parts of the city become more accessible than others. Things as simple as transportation, as bus routes, right? The timing of traffic lights across the city. Certain transportation pathways were designed with access in mind, and as individuals moved out and residents were left without those resources, those thoughts became less pressing in those areas, to where it takes a very long time to get across our city going west to east, or even east to west. It's really a city that was built to go north-south, and that reflects sort of the movement out of the city of a number of previous residents. I mentioned as well the larger question of where businesses are located and where those opportunities exist. We see in Baltimore today what typically gets called the white L and the black butterfly, but it's a way of painting a visual picture of what the demographic map of Baltimore looks like, and centered in the middle, like the body of a butterfly, with a little tail, if you will, going out to the right towards, you know, the Bells Point, Canton area, is where you see high clusters of white residents, and those wings going northwest and northeast and then into the southwest and to a lesser extent, the southeast, are largely African-American communities. And that speaks to the movements of white communities out of different neighborhoods, but also has the unfortunate doubling effect of mirroring where businesses tend to be located. The downtown area in Baltimore is squarely in that middle. And so all of those transportation issues in terms of accessing those opportunities from any of those wings, in a city where transportation typically runs north-south or is designed to, creates an isolating effect. And again, not even in an intentional way now, but because of a history in which that it was intentional, not looking at it critically has the end result, unfortunately, of magnifying the effect of that initial racism. And so we see the ongoing effects of the systemic racism that's not unique to the city. It is, unfortunately, a story that is ongoing nationwide, but has certainly impacted who we talk about when we talk about who has the opportunity to enter the workforce through traditional channels. That starts with something as easy as educational opportunities and where those opportunities exist, college internships, all of those things become part of what we consider to be the ladder towards career readiness, right? The exposure to those things before you're ready to enter the workforce is part of what makes you ready to step into those opportunities. And because of a combination of factors that bring those resources out of communities that have been underserved in a number of different ways, the lack of work readiness there is really an indication of a lack of community support or larger support for communities over time.
Gotcha. And can you explain why workforce development is so important, probably now more than ever?
Absolutely. I think the answer there is really twofold. We're in what feels like a number of different unprecedented times in ways that are both incredibly challenging and I think in ways that create the opportunity for immense growth. The current global pandemic has shone a light on the importance of what is being called essential work, but also just the importance of work opportunities more generally. We exist in an age now where we're sort of redeveloping what remote work looks like. We're redefining what's essential and what really needs to get done and how it needs to happen. And those access to those opportunities are more important now than ever. That employment isn't just important from a paycheck perspective, although with massive numbers of unemployment, that is, of course, an incredible value. But it's also a question of fulfillment, of giving an opportunity to an individual to utilize their gifts. When we were open for business as a workforce center prior to closures, we were seeing, by and large, members of those underserved communities come to us because those were the individuals who would benefit from the services that they had not been given elsewhere. And that starts with something as basic as the fact that, you know, if you don't have a computer at home or if you don't have computers in your school that work reliably, you're not going to develop a comfort level with computers, right? And with so much of the job search happening on a computer, now more than ever, right? Interviews are happening through things like Zoom. You can't expect to come into the workforce with those skills already there. You need to have an environment where you're allowed to cultivate those skills in a learning environment before you're expected to do it professionally. I think I alluded to a couple of different unprecedented times, and I think the other great emergence that we're seeing now is a refocus on the importance of the Black Lives Matter movement. And I think that the issues that they're addressing there nationwide come to bear in particular on the workforce, not because the workforce is, and workforce development is necessarily the primary or only way to address those concerns, but because it is reflective of the issues at large, the question of opportunity and who gets to matter from a workforce perspective are intimately connected with the questions about racial justice and racial equity. And so what we're seeing is a magnifying effect for the clients that we serve, for workforce development clients of those individuals. You know, the CDC recently came out with the announcement of the statistics that people of color are somewhere on 4 to 5 times more likely to be hospitalized from coronavirus. Health outcomes mirror in large part that same demographic shift between the white L central of the butterfly and those wings. And so there's a magnifying effect where the need for both support in that sense and the workforce support to help address the job readiness and some of the barriers that come along with those disparate outcomes in a way that's innovative now, but also supportive and intently focused on the nature of those needs. So, what we're doing now is trying to meet the needs of those clients differently. What we're trying to do is make sure that we're also preparing individuals for a changing workforce landscape, right? I alluded to this earlier, but computer literacy is a big part of what workforce development preparation, especially job readiness and what we call soft skills or transferable skills education is about, because so much of the how of how you go about doing job applications or even day-to-day work in so many different roles is dependent on computer comfort. And so much of what we take for granted with comfort with computers is exposure to it at an early age and consistently, right? And if that's not a resource that's available to you, it's not something that's going to be cultivated. And with libraries closed, community centers closed for the time being, there is no one place that exists that can be reliably accessed to cultivate those skills. It's important that we step in and provide some measure of that at a distance, which is part of our challenge right now in terms of trying to address both a longer history, right, of who comes to us and accesses workforce services and some of the underlying historical reasons for why that might be, but also just the logistical question during quarantine and during a pandemic of how you serve that population effectively given some of the barriers that are presented.
Absolutely. And how are workforce development programs adjusting to meet these employment needs during the pandemic?
That is a great question. One of the things that we started doing very early on as we looked at this work was moving our supports remote. And what that means is that a lot of workshops that we used to host in person, the classes that we hosted in order to help people cultivate those skills in a supportive environment have moved virtual. Now, that brings with it all of the challenges that I alluded to previously about access. We want to be looking at the big picture of who's able to access those services. It's a challenge, but it's a challenge I think that is worth addressing, and we're committed to continuing to explore about how to make sure that we can help build computer literacy while dependent on computers to get our information out there. We also prioritize right now from an employment placement perspective, right, which is an important part of our work, placement with places that are hiring, places that remain consistent in need. We stepped out several years ago through the St. Edward's Workforce Center that I mentioned before to provide automotive technician training to our clients. That decision was made in no small part because there is a lasting relevance of cars to our consumer culture. There is, it's a business that is largely recession-proof because of the continued need of people that people have to take care of their cars, to monitor their cars. And so it was an industry that we felt very good about training because it would provide the opportunity not just for a job, but for a career. We're also working more closely, I think, than ever before with our employers on making sure that we're focusing on job quality, making sure that we're focusing on areas of need in essential businesses, places like grocery stores, and in particular, healthcare settings where there is more of an opportunity to develop and grow within a career ladder, and making sure that we're educating our clients too on part of, you know, the emerging face of workplace safety is an awareness of infectious disease prevention, right? An explanation of our clients as we're coaching them remotely about wearing a mask, washing your hands is now a part of workplace safety. That's and explaining why that is and why that's important. And for our clients as well, we're talking to our employers and making sure that we have a good understanding of what measures are in place at this business, what precautions are being made for employee safety. Making sure that as a workforce organization, our accountability is and will always remain twofold. We are accountable to our clients, to the folks who come to us to access services, to provide meaningful job placement, to provide meaningful training, to provide the opportunity really to showcase gifts and for ongoing flourishing. And by the same token, we're responsible to the employers that we work with to make sure that they're getting individuals who are passionate about this work, who are ready to step into the workplace and have the most up-to-date information that they can about what being in the workplace is and calls them to be each day. And so we want to make sure that we continue those conversations. It's been challenging, to say the least, to do that at a distance, but I think the starkness, the clarity with which we're able to see this need right now has helped us to approach this with an intense amount of energy and passion, because it's such important work at this time.
Absolutely. Wonderful. And can you share with us a success story of someone who has gained employment through your program?
Certainly. So I won't use his real name, but we'll call him Mr. Jones. He came to our program about 2 years ago. He had heard about us through a neighborhood friend. He had been a mechanic, a neighborhood mechanic, had been incarcerated for a number of years and was coming back really looking to find employment. And one of the things that he was expressing frustration over was a criminal record made it very difficult for him to find employment through some traditional pathways. A cousin of his had actually applied through one of our partners, our training partner, Vehicles for Change, to do a Master Tech auto training program. And through his cousin, he heard about the program that we host with Vehicles for Change for entry-level mechanics. It was a 12-week training program geared toward automotive service excellence certification. He began the program with us, went through our job readiness programming, worked with our job placement specialists to develop an employment plan, worked with a case manager to secure housing and to address some other barriers in terms of renewing a driver's license, making sure he had all of the work documentation that he needed. He was a successful graduate. He ended up being asked on to that Master Tech training after completing the entry-level course. And now actually works as a full-time staff member at Vehicles for Change, our training partner. So a great example, and what I'll say is he came to the program with an immense amount of prior knowledge on auto mechanics, on maintenance, What I say to many of the individuals who come to access the services in different parts of our agency across workforce programming is that our goal, our mission is not to give anyone any skills that they don't have already. 9 times out of 10, our job is about what we call motivational interviewing, which is really about shining a light on the skills that are already there, but that an individual may not be giving themselves credit for, or may not be trained to see based on the opportunities that they feel they've been excluded from. What our goal is to help move some of the barriers, and we talked about a little bit earlier here why some of those barriers exist and the history around some of those barriers and how they still persist in a more pernicious way now, where we don't even necessarily recognize the decisions that we're making by maintaining a status quo that has a very tainted history, because it perpetuates a lot of those barriers for individuals. And people of color, the communities that we've talked about in different parts of the city that occupy those wings of the butterfly are disproportionately affected by those barriers. And so part of our role is to move those out of the way, to create a more level playing field, to create more equity around pursuit of those opportunities, but also to help people to see their own gifts. Mr. Jones, in this example, would have been a fine auto mechanic without coming to us, but I'd like to think that our walking with him, our time together, helped to motivate and to really gain confidence in the skills that he already had, and take some of the pressure off having to address those barriers alone. Because the reality of it is, when we talk about resources, we talk about transportation as an access, education, no one comes to work and gets ready for work alone. That there's a support system that's always in place, whether it's you seeing a close relative working and exposure to that secondhand, or even the opportunities that you feel like are encouraged for you in school, the preparation for educational attainment towards a career, and being coached in a way that you feel like you're believed in, that those are incredibly valuable opportunities. And so your role is not so much, while the technical training piece is vital, and there are certainly skills that do come from that, much more important, I think, is to have that support system where, regardless of what happens, right, the changing landscape and pandemic's a good example of this. It's not about having those answers preset and understood, but having a community around you, which can help support you through them as you figure out those answers together.
Wonderful. Well, thank you, Kevin Creamer, Client Services Manager of our Daily Bread Employment Center, for serving as our topic expert today. And if you are interested in more podcasts like this, Catholic Charities is releasing more recordings all week on workforce development, as well as other topics. Join us again tomorrow while you're working towards your STEP goal. Thank you for listening.